Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to The Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh, and I'm joined, as always, by Andy Doyle. But Andy, we're in a different location this week. We're out here on Paul O'Connell's farm, and we've just wrapped up our Tramlines event. This week, we'll do the podcast slightly differently. We've had good talks here from the presenters and on grain markets and fertiliser markets, so we'll take their opinions for a change. And I know Noel was chatting to a few farmers earlier on. We went through a lot of things today, Andy. Pick out one of your highlights for a start.
Oh, Siobhan, that's probably a little bit difficult. I'm actually going to breach that request right at the beginning because of the different presentations there were. I was very interested in what Liz Glynn of Corteva was saying about a new nitrogen inhibitor product that they're using, that they're beginning to use, which is helping to decrease both ammonia loss and nitrate loss from the same product. Like, that's really good news for Ireland. Moving to the next speaker or another speaker, Phelim Dolan. Phelim was excellent in terms of saying that, you know, the market is full of possibilities, but very, very little in the line of probabilities for the year ahead. And that's about it, you know. And a couple of things in particular that we're not hearing said that often, which he spoke about, was the fact that drought, which is mainly talked about in the US and Europe, also had a really big impact in China. And as China is a big importing country, you know, we don't know yet what the impact of that will be on the market, but it may very well have some effect. He also actually talked about the fact that we are looking at a year that we will have slightly lower supply, but the probability looks like slightly lower demand also. Mm-hmm. And as the industry sees it at the moment, those two could be in balance. So while we have less supply, it's not a guarantee that prices would necessarily rise. And on the fertiliser markets, we'll look at what Liam Dunphy had to say. It was dire, probably, is the only way to put it. There's a need for action to try and secure access, because at the end of the day, he's right. We're at the end of the supply line for Europe. And if we are not actively moving to get those supplies, they may not be there at the 11th hour. And I guess there are three kind of major points of what was said here today.
Yeah. I laugh when you said it was dire what Liam had to say, but when he puts the figures up there in front of you, you realise just how serious the situation we're in, and how Phelim's talk, you know, went so closely with Liam's as well. We'll go back to the start. Liz's talk, we've talked so much about nitrates on this podcast, and, you know, there seems to be some sort of a solution there to help with leaching, which would be massive in tillage on freer draining soils. So we might just listen to a bit of what Liz had to say about that technology now.
So the first we'll have a look at is nitrogen management. As we said, it is becoming more to the fore, trying to reduce the amount of nitrogen that's being put out. How can we go about that? Is there anything that we have in our armoury that can help with that? Some of you might have heard about this. This stuff isn't reinventing the wheel. Optinite, or NLOC as it would be known, is a is a nitrogen stabiliser that was originally developed by Dow back in the 50s. It has since progressed to that, and as you can see from the map, you know, it's used extensively around the world. A lot of it would go on corn. And look, they won an award for it in 2016 for green chemistry. So we're trying to get a bit more positive on some of these things. Well, we've relaunched it in 2022, so it'll be coming into Ireland in 23. It's now called Instinct, slightly different formulation. Just to give an idea, you know, so what? How does it work? So it's all about reducing the losses of nitrogen into the environment, and how do we do that? So really how the likes of products like Instinct work, you apply it onto your crop, and what it does is it slows down the breakdown. So when you've applied your fertilizer, you apply it as close as you can after your, let's say, your main application. You apply on your Instinct, and what it does is the bacteria that breaks down the ammonia that you've applied, it slows down that process and actually inhibits it. So the nitrosomonas bacteria that we talk about, it breaks down the ammonia into nitrate and, you know, it breaks down the fertilizer. So what this does is it inhibits that bacteria that breaks it down and means that you have more ammonium in the soil for longer and you can get more out of that nitrogen. And it also, because of that, reduces the levels of leaching. So, as I said, it's been extensively used. You know, we're seeing a big decrease in the level of leaching. As I said, they've done work over the last 10, 12 years on trials, over 1,000 trials. Now, look, this is on all different crops, not always just the crops that we're used to here. Reducing in leaching, emissions, and also then there's obviously a decrease in the soil nitrogen retention because it's holding on to that rather than leaching it out quickly after it's been applied. And then obviously as people will always ask, you know, what am I getting in yield? We have seen yield, you know, bumps in it, around 7%, that's somewhere between 5 and 10. Look, it's not always and it's not huge, but there's definitely a benefit to using it. We've seen that. We're also trying to see, you know, is there any option to use this in the likes of grass? Because that's another one where we see, obviously, an awful large losses from nitrogen. So that's not covered yet, but we're trying to get there with it. So, what are the benefits of it? So, as I said, the period of inhibition, it stops that bacteria breaking down the ammonium into nitrate for about 10 to 12 weeks. So it means you've got it in the soil there for longer for the plant. More nitrogen available, less leaching, and then obviously greenhouse gas emissions. So you've got positive for the crop and positive for the environment. Higher yields, as I said, look, the NUE, nitrogen use efficiency, it's there for longer, more chance the plant being able to use the fertilizer. Reduced number of applications, and look, you can apply earlier more in the season, because as it reduces that leaching and risk of it being volatilized.
Okay, Andy, so that was Liz talking earlier today. And of course, look, Liz was talking about the nitrogen leaching technologies and all that kind of thing. And she'd much more to say on Corteva and sustainability. But staying with the fertilizer team, Liam explained we buy about 1.68 million tonnes of fertilizer in Ireland, 0.05% of the world fertilizer market. I think he said 400 million tonnes was the world fertilizer production. So we're a really small player, like. But Liam seems to be confident that we will have supply in 2023 if we do something now.
He was particularly confident, I think, of being able to supply nitrogen forms.
Yeah.
And the one that he went for on that was urea.
Yeah.
Because the can depends on access to ammonium nitrate as the starting point. And I think he said about 80% of that was coming from Russia or Russian-controlled operations. He said can could be a very big difficulty. But while urea, on the face of it, would appear to be likely to be available in adequate supplies, if CAN isn't there, then the demand will be much bigger for urea overall. Mm. So no matter which way we look at or listen to what was said, there have to be fears for availability. Fear probably is a better word than saying that there will not be availability. Mm. But what he was, I think, a lot more concerned about was access to P's and K's. Because so many of those come directly from countries now that are sanctioned, that if there aren't that many other places we can go, and any of the other places that there may be availability, they're all just so much further away. Mm. And we are not the regular customers, so they may or may not choose to deal with us.
Yeah, and Liam was very keen, you know, to get some sort of a plan in place in order for Ireland to have fertiliser. You know, we need fertiliser in the country by January, we need a significant amount. He gave the tonnage earlier on, you'll hear it back in the presentation. But, you know, if those plants that have closed aren't opening due to the natural gas prices, you know, we need some sort of a plan from government, and we need Farmworks and the fertiliser industry to come together on that. And that's something that Liam was keen to say today. So we might just have a listen to Liam now.
The thing to bear in mind is there is actually no fertiliser manufacturer in Ireland. We are solely dependent on imports. We're a small island off the coast of Europe. We're probably the last port of call for the fertiliser manufacturers in Europe. It costs them more to get the product to us than sell it in their own countries in mainland Europe. So bear that in mind all the time. Our market last year was 1.68 million tonnes of fertiliser. Sounds like an awful lot, but on a world scale, it's actually tiny. And I'll show you in a minute what we're dealing with on a world scale. So you can see there back in 18, when we had a fodder crisis, fertiliser tonnes peaked at 1.7 million, has dipped a bit since, and it actually increased a bit last year. There has been increases since quotas were removed. You can see that yourselves. From a farmer point of view, and this is what I'm trying to get across, and even from an industry point of view, or if there are customers here also, like merchant and co-op customers, we need to be very conscious of what do we need to do to get to the end of next March, would be my opinion. So what happened to the end of next March in the previous 2 years? To the end of March 21, 935,000 tonnes out of that 1.68 million tonnes moved by the end of March. We need to make that happen to ensure that everyone gets fertiliser. There is limited storage, there is limited production capacity. We need to take it in earlier than most other European countries in order to make sure we have it there for the spring. This year, with a reduction in fertiliser by the end of March, and these are official Department of Agriculture stats, there was just a little over 800,000 tonnes of fertiliser moved out by the end of March. So to try and give you a fix on, as an industry, what we need to do as a fertiliser industry and a co-op and merchant industry also, we need to somehow or another secure 500,000 tonnes of fertiliser by the end of December, and we need to have a plan in place to secure another 500,000 tonnes by the end of next March. Now, I don't want to make this dramatic, but as we stand at the moment, the plans to make that happen are not good. But this is what our job is, to work on that and make it happen. So there are sources of supply. If you just start, and a quick run through it, if you start at the bottom right of the map as you're looking up at it, and if you go back into 2022, Greece was gone for 2022. Turkey was gone. They held on to their own fertiliser production. They did not export. You know what happened in Ukraine. You know what's happening in Russia currently. Lithuania was on one leg, I would call it. They are now gone for the winter of 2022. Germany running at about 50% in the year gone out. Holland and Belgium, something similar. UK closed down half their production. And then come down the left-hand side of the map, we got some product from there as a country. But we were in an okay enough position with those countries last January, February, in that we had business done as a country. Now, I'm not just talking about our own selves here. As a country, we had business done. The plans were in place. Those plans are not in place today, so we need, as a country, to make things happen. And I'm even talking about the Farmers' Journal with publicity about these things. The farm bodies, the fertiliser industry, the co-ops, the merchants, the Department of Agriculture. Everyone needs to be involved to make sure we can make this happen. This will give you an idea of world production of fertiliser. Roughly, if you add all the figures there together, it comes out at about 400 million tonnes. Urea is huge in the world. It's nearly half of it. The biggest concerns I'd have going down along would be the DAP and the MAP, which are the phosphate products. My own belief is, and I know Phelan had a little reference to urea, my own belief is you'll get urea from somewhere, always, because it's so much production. It come from America, it can now come from Nigeria, it can come from Kazakhstan or over that part of the world as well. Traditionally, it comes from Egypt and Algeria into Ireland. So I think we'd be able to get our hands on some form of a nitrogen source. Price is another day's work, and risk of bringing it where we bring it from is another day's work also. But the phosphate is the one I'd worry about, and the MOP, and I'll show you those in a second. So bear in mind, inside in that figure, we're 1.68 million tonnes of this. That's less than 0.5%. That's where we feature in the world fertiliser market. We're about 3.5 or 4% of Europe, but Europe's roughly 40 million tonnes. Just looking behind here, you see a bit of Ken backed away here. CAN is our biggest raw material in Ireland. It's our biggest product. It's roughly 550, 600 out of the 1.68 million tonnes. Something to bear in mind is it's predominantly a Western European product. If you just look at the table I have there and you just go down the left, the 15 million tonnes of can, 95% of it is European. And that's where our issue is going to be. Are we going to be able to replace this with urea? The effect of the gas on the availability of CAN and the price, obviously. The price is a huge issue here as well, but I just refer to availability first of all.
Andy, on the urea, you're often talking about urea and tillage and you're an advocate for it. What's that going to mean for tillage next year? You know, if urea is the product of choice, are the products that product that's there, how's that going to change management on farms?
Well, I think it probably means we have to be a little bit more selective as to when we throw it out on bare ground. So it probably would be a lot more of a concern for the early dressings on malting barley when there's no ground cover there. It really doesn't change at all how you would manage a winter crop because there's always a cover there. The one place that would differ for some people would be how do you get your sulfur out? And that might mean going for either a urea plus sulfur or a straight an ASN type product if they were available as well. And they might not be available, no more than having can available.
Yeah.
So I think there will be a need for change, but it's not a change that would worry me massively. But the year could have a big impact on how we view how it works. Because while I would never have been afraid of using urea in winter grain where there's a cover, I might not have the same view on a spring grain. Because if you got a very warm, dry spring, like we've had some of recently, there's a danger that it could just sit there for a long time.
Yeah.
Or be lost through volatilization, which is certainly the last thing we want.
Losing ammonia, yeah. And we're not really sure about protected urea on tillage crops either. So, you know, the research isn't there on that yet. So
no, and I don't know if we can automatically assume because they have measured volatilization losses on grass that it would automatically superimpose the tillage because it's not necessarily sitting in the same pH ranges and it's not sitting in an area that's highly concentrated with slurry over a number of years of application, etc. So all those things make a difference.
Andy, we got some farmer opinions here today. Of course, we had plenty of interaction from the crowd, but Noel Barden, our news reporter, spoke to some farmers and we're going to hear from them now.
So how do you think the harvest went for you? Did you get everything in? Are you happy enough?
We still have beans cut. We have cut some beans, spring beans that we sowed in early December. And what we've cut so far, we're delighted with the return on it. The only problem was the moisture content was very low, which is not ideal for beans, but in excess of 3 ton at low moisture, you know, so we can't complain about that. And we have a good price locked in with the merchant.
And would you be worried about any of the beans that are left, or do you still think time will come?
No. We just checked them yesterday. Even when we were cutting, some of the stems were very green. Anything rarer than that, you would have problems with your combine, you know, there'd be green wrapping around, etc. But other than that, the harvest of beans is easy enough, you know.
How do you think the tillage sector will be looking going into next year?
The big issue is costs. I mean, you look behind you there with Paul's shed, fertiliser is the biggest talk in the market there about it. Fertiliser, the availability and the price is the big issue. And other input costs as well have skyrocketed. And availability of some of the... So it's very easy to get excited about a good price, but when you add up your costs, it hasn't been a bad year, I suppose. Primarily the weather was on our side, but there were issues then in different parts of drought. I'd be always happy when the weather is fine. It was easy to harvest, it was easy to take straw, you know.
And do you think the costs have kept pace with the... Or do you think the price have kept pace with the fertiliser costs and diesel and everything else?
No is the answer. Because there's so many variables in locking into a good price this year. And, you know, it was down to individuals. And it was moved, the pace on what was happening was moving that quickly, that it was very hard to stay with it. I mean, what was a good price this time last year wasn't a good price in May. And some people have sold a lot forward, some people had very little sold forward. So it's a mixed bag, but there was a fairly good price going forward for LC Rape for next year.
So, Martin, you're up here today from West Cork. How did the harvest go in general for you down that end of the country?
In general, very good. Our winter barley started later than most. The majority of the farmers around us were finished. We started around the 15th of July. Yields started off pretty good with 2-row and traditional 6-row varieties, around 3.5 ton. Got better as the crops progressed. The hybrid Belfries did very well, up around 4 ton. Average bushels were around 64, 66. Quite happy with it. We finished that. We progressed straight away onto winter oats, and very happy with that. Husky, 3.8 tons and averaging 55 bushels, and pretty much straight into spring barley, then malting barley. Thankfully, it all passed with no issue, and straight into feed barley. And it just was day in, day out, baling and cutting.
But the weather helped, I suppose.
The weather was amazing. We would have had issues if the weather wasn't so good with labour, if we had to start tossing and turning straw to keep it dry. But the weather was a massive help there, in that just on the labour issue alone. Could not get a farm help, either truck drivers or general farm labourers, but we got through.
Thanks to Noel and all the farmers who had a chat with us here on Wednesday. It is Wednesday, just so you know that we're recording. It's Wednesday afternoon, and grain price as it currently stands for December Matif wheat is at €329.50. Andy, it's gone up €10.75, I think, from yesterday. We had Phelim Dolan here from Comex McKinnon earlier on, and you know, he spoke about the uncertainty in the markets, and there's so many factors feeding into those markets. We'll hear from Phelim in a second, but I suppose his talk was an eye-opener for many here.
Yes, indeed. I'm expecting that people would have been aware of the variables, but Phelim kind of put a perspective on them. And the perspective basically was that, you know, we do have Ukraine coming in on the supply side. We still don't know how much grain in total will come from there. But he mentioned the fact that there is a belief that Russia will try to begin to disrupt that grain corridor, that grain transport corridor. If it does, it obviously affects overall supply characteristics. But I put it to Phelim at a point, you know, what about Russia? I'm hearing all of the time that Russia is having difficulty selling its grain because the shippers, the bankers and the insurers are doing their damnedest to avoid the risk of being caught with product in situ in Russian ports. And as a consequence, Russia is now beginning to discount prices. And of course, it will also be discounting price to try and begin to hurt Ukrainian exports, because that's part of what they're doing. So like, that was something that was an interesting angle. And Liam Dunphy concurred with that it's also an issue for the fertilizer industry. So while we can legally take grains and fertilizer from Russia, the problem that many in the industry have is that they can't deal through companies associated with oligarchs, so that there's not money going into the system that could be conceived as going to help the war effort in Russia. So, you know, that was kind of one of the big things that he said. And the other one was the complete uncertainty about what's happening in China. We all know that China had a big drought, but we don't know whether it means minus 5 million tons or minus 30 million tons within Chinese production, because that could have a big impact on demand going forward as well.
And we'll listen to a bit of what Phelim had to say now.
I've been in the grain business now trading for roughly 30 years, actually 31 years in October. And standing here in September 2022, I have no more a clue than any of the rest of us here today what's going to happen in the grain markets over the next 6 months. I'll try and just point out a few possibilities, because I think in the uncertain world that we're living in at the moment, and particularly this last year and a half, there are so many possibilities, but there are really very few probabilities. And You know, it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but I really think it's true. You know, we've seen, I suppose, a year, 2022, and you could say probably the second half of 2021 and through the COVID period, where we really have probably never lived in, most of us anyway, have never lived in as volatile a time. So first of all, we had 2 years of COVID and the economic, I suppose, uncertainties created by that, a lot of hoarding of cash as well by people. You then had a sort of, I would say, a global economy which was probably overheating in the run-up to COVID, which then took a bit of a setback during the COVID period, but got a kind of a shot of adrenaline then once restrictions started to be lifted, and you got a lot of spending and holidaying and all sorts, which I think, again, overheated the economy. And I think things like stock markets, commodity markets, all of these things began to become overvalued even before the Russians invaded Ukraine. So I think we are now facing a recession globally that was probably going to happen regardless of Ukraine. But the energy crisis created by the Ukrainian-Russian war has accelerated the onset of this recession, I believe. And ultimately, even in a situation where supplies have been restricted and problems have been, you know, when we've had drought, etc., recession is not good for demand for any commodities. So that's something just to be wary of. Now, going back to the weather, you know, we had a wonderful summer here. We had probably the best harvest we've ever seen. But extraordinarily dry weather, which we're now paying for. But we also saw drought in the western USA, all over Western Europe, and probably, you know, the biggest one of all in China, which is probably the least known about because information really doesn't come out of there in an effective way. And the crop principally damaged by this drought globally is maize. So we do have genuine supply concerns, and ultimately that will serve to support the market going forward, unquestionably. We've already been talking about, you know, the energy crisis here earlier and the price of natural gas, which is, the primary ingredient in the production of urea. You're already seeing urea plants on the continent, in Germany, in Norway, closing down because they can't afford the price of natural gas. You know, that for me is something that government needs to get a handle on. You know, one way or the other, we need to make sure that urea production is maintained, whatever it costs. I mean, we see politicians at the moment talking about, and rightly so, helping people to deal with the cost of energy through the winter. Well, you know, urea is fundamental to the continued growth of and yield of agricultural commodities, which, you know, if we want to avoid hunger in the world going forward, we have to absolutely make sure that production is maintained. We're all kind of caught up at the moment in crop 2022. This absence or potential lack of urea production is a huge concern for crop 23, I would say. Anyway, in the bigger picture, looking at, I suppose, native grain and wheat and barley that we grow, wheat and barley demand is likely to be quite good this year. Maize is, relatively speaking, more expensive. And over the last decade, maize has become, I suppose, the primary ingredient in most animal feeds produced. It's top of the ticket on most items. But I would say wheat and barley are well positioned to make a comeback in terms of regaining market share from maize. The quality of the harvest this year is also a help. And I suppose one other point I just mentioned there, which is a smallish one, but could be interesting. There's a major problem in the fibre side of the market this year because Russia was one of the major providers of beet pulp to the European market in the demise, or I suppose since the demise of sugar beet production in Western Europe or in the EU. So again, a bit like being reliant on Russia for oil and gas, we become very reliant on Russia for principally for beet pulp. But that's gone now. So the fibre side of the animal feed ration this year is problematic. And it certainly will assist barley in formulations. It should force people into looking at oats, which compound feed millers, generally speaking, are reluctant to do. And it should also augur well for beans. but we'll see how that progresses. And also, you guys as farmers will know that grass growth this year has been greatly restricted, particularly in the latter half of the summer. A lot of farmers are already feeding the winter forage. That augurs well for feed demand in the winter as well, I would say, particularly as long as milk prices stay strong, which they look like they're going to do for the medium term. So it's not, you know, a very mixed bag in the market, but, you know, some good news and some bad news, but still a lot of uncertainty as to what issues will dominate.
Andy Phelan spoke about the US as well. He spoke about, you know, ethanol demand and corn. He spoke about the recession as well. And, you know, even, you know, talking about less timber and steel coming through the ports.
Yeah, and look, it was very much on the demand side that he mentions the recession. He said recession is not an if, it's an is.
Yeah.
You know, what will that mean for demand? He hinted that it will certainly mean less requirement for meat, but that grains are pretty robust. But, you know, if there's not as much meat going to be needed and consumed, there will not be as much grain needed and consumed. One thing that he didn't mention, I think, in passing, was that there's an expectation that US maize is likely to see more of it going into the ethanol industry in the US in the year ahead, because they're looking at issues with fuel availability, as we all are, fuel and energy, both costs and availability.
Yeah.
And, you know, the numbers that I'm seeing would suggest maybe up to another 20 million tonnes. So if you have a bit less production, a bit more going into bioethanol, a bigger demand in China, you know, it probably it would need a big overall hit in overall demand to leave the thing in balance. And that's what Phelan was saying. We just don't know. But all of these individual variables, it's the juggler with all the balls in the air, which one is going to fall first.
Yeah.
And any one of them could have either a negative or a positive effect. It could be either. The direction of travel in the next 6 months, 9 months, 12 months is completely uncertain still in grain markets.
Yeah. Look, Andy, there was loads to take in here at the event today. We certainly hope people who attended enjoyed it, and thanks to everyone for attending. And we hope people who couldn't attend get something out of the podcast, and we'll definitely cover more of this online and in the paper as well. So thanks to everybody for listening. There's showers flying around here now. I hope the showers go away and let whatever crops are still to be harvested get done over the weekend. Hopefully it looks like there's a bit of sunshine in the forecast, so hopefully those crops get in. But until next week, thanks for listening, and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.